Hey, everyone. Welcome to Season 10, Week 4 of The Tension Podcast. We are a show that acknowledges most of life and faith is lived in the tension between the two extremes. Each week, we look at what many of us were taught growing up in evangelical churches. We weigh it against what our current culture is saying. We try to find what Jesus has for us in the tension between the two. We haven't met. My name is Jonathan Carone, and we're joined, as always, by our co-host, Mr. Eric Williams. Eric, go ahead and say hey to the people.
Hey. Yeah. We're rolling. You know, Week 4. This is like the cleanup hitter. Got the stages all set. And knock them all in. It's going to be, it's going to be a strikeout or a home run, I guess. We'll see which one.
Well, it is the third of kind of a three episode arc of this whole loving others like Jesus type of thing that we've been talking about. So we've got the other two on base and they've stolen second and third. So they're in scoring position. We just have to do our job and get them in here.
There you go. And all the non-baseball people just tuned out. So that's cool. All right. Welcome back.
Welcome back. So, hey, for today's show, I've had this question rolling around in my head since COVID. So it's been about 4 years that I've been thinking about this. And the question is, why is it so dang hard for people to love their neighbor?
Huh?
It seems like one of Jesus. I might leave that in there.
Jesus.
It seems like one of Cheez-Its easiest commands. It does seem like one of Jesus' easiest commands to just love your neighbor.
Yeah.
He even goes, it doesn't matter who your neighbor is. Just love them, treat them well, serve them, be a good person. But the more I've thought about it, the more I realize that we tend to focus on the first part of that command without really taking into consideration the last part. Love your neighbor as yourself. And love your neighbor as yourself is often quoted from the New Testament when Jesus is talking about the greatest commandments, but it was first introduced to us in Leviticus 19:18. And the full verse reads, quote, "Do not take revenge or bear a grudge against members of your community, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord." So this whole chapter is framed in the context of being holy as God is holy. So if love your neighbor has been a commandment since we first got commandments from God, and this is part of us in our desire to be like him, why is it so freaking hard for so many people to simply love their neighbor? And I'm going to go ahead and give you my two things, and then Eric, you can jump in here, and okay, we'll get into it a little bit more in a second. But
yep,
I think it comes down to two extremes of the same coin. On one side of that coin, people don't love themselves in a way that makes it possible for them to love their neighbors as themselves.
Okay.
On the other side, I think this idea of self-love and loving ourselves has gotten in the way of us loving our neighbor. And we're going to break those down. I don't know if you've actually read the notes this week or not, but when you first hear those two things, what are your thoughts?
I agree. I mean, and yeah, I did read the notes. Thank you. Miracles do happen. You know, we can start singing some songs of praise and lift up a shout of praise, right? But I think the other place that I would posit that maybe we can't get into today, but I think the other tension for me is in that interaction when we're talking about from the New Testament, right? You know, The Pharisees, or I don't know, it's what one of the big three enemies, right? The scribes, the Pharisees, or whoever else, teachers of religious law, they're all trying to like trick Jesus and saying, which commandment is the greatest commandment? Like, gonna get a gotcha. And he gives a good answer. And then there's a follow-up for another potential gotcha where he says, well, then who's my neighbor, right? And that's where you get into the Good Samaritan, I think, is the next parable he tells, right? So I think what I would have loved to hear is one of them to say, can you define what love means, Jesus? Because I think that there's a more fundamental question beyond those extremes, is that we don't really understand the idea of love as Jesus meant it. Because as we've talked in previous podcast episodes, you know, is it loving to, quote, allow someone to continue in their sin? Is it loving to, speak the truth to them? Is it loving to, quote, accept their you know, way of life, or ignore this or that or the other, right? Like, those are all pieces, which I think is like the natural outpouring of that, is we don't understand what love means in the way that Jesus meant it. So how can we possibly love ourselves appropriately? And so that's, I think, the base coming down to why is it so hard to love our neighbors ourselves? Because we don't know what that means. And we skew it in the either we don't love ourselves appropriately on one side for the self-hatred, which is what we talk about, or we don't love ourselves appropriately on the other side, which is the abundance of the modern self-love movement.
Yep. So I want to get into both of those. And you just dropped a word that I don't know if you meant to do this or not, or if you abundance? Were foreshadowing, but I want to say,
was it
I
abundance?
Want to say that you meant to do it.
Like we did last week, or abundance. Like we just released episode on abundance and, you know, I'm going to manifest this in my life. And if I just pray more, then I will have abundance in love. Oh, no, that's not what you meant. Okay.
Nope. It was the idea of self-hatred, because okay. That's on one side. And I think for a lot of people, hatred probably feels like too strong of a label, but psychology today has kind of defined self-hatred as saying self-hatred encompasses continual feelings of inadequacy, guilt, and low self-esteem. People may constantly compare themselves to others, perceive only the negative and ignore the positive, and believe they will need to never be able to be good enough. And so maybe you don't say that as self-hatred. Maybe you don't like that label. But if you feel or know people who have those continual feelings of inadequacy, they constantly feel guilt, and they have low self-esteem. That's kind of what we're talking about in this side of the coin. This
well, let
idea
me jump in real
of,
quick, because when I was a youth pastor or student ministry pastor, whatever you want to say, like we would have conversations about this with young people. And the conversation, they wouldn't say it in these many words, but it would revolve around like, how can I love my neighbor as myself when I don't even have a high value of myself? So that's one one conversation. The other conversation would go, well, I am treating them the way I want to be treated, which is, you know, love your neighbor as yourself. I am treating them the way that I want to be treated because I don't believe that I'm, you know, like I don't treat myself well. So why, yep. You know, like the way I'm treating them is actually better than I'm treating myself because I don't treat myself well, or I'm justifying the way I'm treating them because of that. The other aspect goes to like, you know, with my kids now, we're going through talks about bullies or talks about people that are doing that. And the conversation goes around. It's like, there's obviously something going on in that person's life where they don't feel confident about themselves. And so they're taking it out on you, or they're manifesting that in the following way. So there is a bit of, you know, I'm loving you the way that I love me because I don't love me. If we were, you know, we were like to be completely honest.
And we'll get to the solution for that towards the end of the episode. But
nice.
I just want to lay out the case for it. Like that's one side of this coin. And the one thing I want to point out, and I want to be really clear about this. No one chooses to dislike themselves. No one chooses to be paralyzed by inadequacy or guilt or low self-esteem. That's not a conscious choice that we make. Most often, when someone's dealing with self-loathing or self-hatred, it's because of external traumatic factors that have impacted their life, usually as kids. And that usually comes from
therapy.
Parents, caregivers.
Therapy. Get medication. Go to therapy.
Every week.
I want to make like a little like, you know, undercurrent. If we could get the whole choir, you know, in the background, you know, rah, 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 singing, rah, rah, go to therapy, get medication. It is not bad to focus on your mental health. Go to therapy. Everyone around you will thank you later.
I've got that in the solution part when we get later in the notes, but
I know, but I didn't want to give away. Like, I want to make sure that everybody.
Well,
like,
we know listener retention. Most people aren't going to get there. So we're talking to ourselves by the end of the episode.
Fine.
So, for those of you that want to bail out now, there you go. But no one chooses to feel this way about themselves. But unfortunately, the reality is many people do feel these negative things about themselves. So Eric, you've hit on these a little bit, but as you think about our negative self-image and how that impacts how we love others as ourselves, what does that bring up in your mind?
Yeah. So we touched on a little bit on the bullying. Like, if I have a low sense of value and I can't raise my own sense of self-value or self-worth, right? I'm down here. The only way for me to feel adequate or like I measure up to anybody else is going to be to what? Is going to be to tear you down to my level. And so that's where you get bullying. That's where you have these other things where you want to downplay on that side. I don't feel worthy. I think you feel worthy about yourself. So I'm going to pull you down so you can be on my level. So that's a negative piece. I think anybody that's grew up, I don't know. I think that was kind of a big response to the bullying when we were kids, you know, 80s, 90s, early 2000s was like, they're not happy about themselves. And so they've just got to like tear you down. So bully side. I think the other piece too, where it's like you start to, if you don't see your own value, self-worth, self-love, or where you can't be, I would just even say like the word content. I can't be content with what I have. So that's the gap between my contentness and my expectation is filled with jealousy, or is filled with anger, or is filled with hatred. Because now, how much time have we been talking so far? 11 minutes. This is probably not a new record for me to start talking political, but bingo, like that's where we're going to start othering people and say, it's those immigrants, it's the libs, it's the fascists on the right, it's the this, it's the that. Because you have to fill that gap between I'm content with what I have and my expectations or what I see in others. And so you're going to fill that with some othering, and you're going to somehow start to demonize other people because of whatever. And I think that stems because you don't love yourself, or you're not content with who you are, what you have. You're not, you don't have a firm foundation in the image of Christ within you.
I think that's one side of it. I would actually say another portion of this is when you're constantly worrying about what people will think of you, it actually paralyzes you from doing the good things that you really want to do.
Yeah.
I want to show that person love, but what will they think of me, Eric? Will they think I'm weird if I go out of my way to do something for them? What if they think I'm out of line? What if I step out of place and they see my good deed as something else? I don't want to make it worse by just trying to help. So I guess I'm just not going to do anything at all because I'm so worried about what they're going to think of me. And so that puts us in like the state of paralysis where we want to do good, but our mental state and the way we view ourselves and the constant worry of what others will think about us keep us from doing the good that we want to do.
Now, are you saying, because I would agree with you on the like third party situation where, you know, I want to do good. Person A wants to do good for person B, but because person C, D, and E are observing, I'm afraid that person C, D, and E are going to think that I'm whatever. Or, you know, it's like, that's why we don't stand up against bullies, because person C, D, and E are going to think I'm not cool anymore. Or, you know, and now this is a derogatory term, but you know, back in when I was growing up, it was like, oh, you're gay for doing that. Right. In the derogatory as an insult, as a slur, right? It's like, that's what you'd be called. It was like, oh, you're this or that or whatever. Oh, dude, that's gay, right? Like, why is that that way when I'm trying to help someone else or show love for someone else? Maybe I'm not catching it. I'm not necessarily seeing that A to
B. So there's that. There's that. Yeah. But there's also the A to B. It's like, hey, I heard that Eric's going through something. Like, it just, I saw some stuff on social media. One of his friends told me about this. Okay. And so I want to reach out. I want to do something loving to them, but what are they going to think about? Like, I don't want to pile on and I don't want them to think negative of me. So I don't know if I should reach out to them. I don't know am I going to make it worse or what are they going to think of me if I do that? Am I supposed to know this all those feelings that come with that of, like, I want to do something, but I don't know how they're going to think of me, even though I wouldn't think bad of them if they did that to me.
Yep.
But myself, my negative self-image, let's take it away from self-hatred or self-loathing, but my negative self-image makes me think that if I were to do something for them, they're going to look at me negatively, even though there's no chance I would ever look at them negatively.
Yep. Okay. All right. I'm with you on that one. Okay. Now I see, cause like I've had friends are going through something, either family member passes or like I hear that their marriage isn't doing well or, you know, something. It's like, I want to text them, but
I want to check in, but am I going to make it worse?
Or are they going to think I'm weird? Or are they going to think I'm this? Are they going to think that I'm like imposing? Yeah. Or like you said, making it worse. Okay. All right. I get it. Yep. Point.
So the flip side of that idea though, is when you're so worried about people not liking you or feeling like you have to earn someone's love, you can become overbearing in your attempt to love them. And you can actually push them away by being too much because you're trying to earn their love at this point. And so because you don't feel positive about yourself, I'm going to earn the love. For those of you who know the Enneagram, this is a fatal flaw of the Enneagram 2. So if you're an Enneagram 2, you probably relate to this side of things, but you can push people away by loving them too much because your motivations aren't really to love them. Your motivation is to make them like you.
Right.
And because you're loving them in order to receive love back, it comes across in a non-loving way.
There you go. Yeah, I agree with that. I would say that that's the motivation for your love, which
we all know that person.
And I've been that person. I mean, I've been that person where it's like, I'm writing a check or I'm donating this thing or I'm going to this. And it's like, you know, it flies against the, like the, let your good deeds, you know, like don't do them out in the public or don't even pray out in public, like all those different pieces. You know, it's like the motivation for why are you doing these things? I've been there. Of course I've been there where I've been like, you know what? I want to be generous and I'm going to give this amount of money or I'm going to donate this thing or donate my time. And yeah, of course I want to be generous, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, I kind of hope they notice that I'm sacrificing my time and resources for this. Ugh, ouch. Which is why can we please let's go back, get in the time machine. You know, Doc Brown, we're going to go 88 miles an hour, go back to Jesus time, pull out in the DeLorean, open up the thing. And when everybody is like, whoa, what the heck is this thing? Be like, don't worry about that. Hey, Jesus, can you clarify something? It'd be really good right now if you could tell us what it means to actually love. And then, hey, whoever's over here writing this down, record what he says here. Okay, thanks. Okay, bye. Go back in the DeLorean. Back to the future. Great Scott. Right?
So that's one side of the extreme. The other side of the extreme end of this pendulum is an overemphasis on self-love. And sometimes we can be so focused on loving ourselves, it gets in the way of us loving others. And I think for a lot of us, when we move away from this, we talked, I think it was last week, it was a couple weeks ago, I think it was in the first week of the season, about how the American church has kind of swung from that young, restless, reformed, you deserve death, you're a terrible person, to God has the best for you and the good things are happening, the best is yet to come. And we swing to that. And I think for so many of us who grew up in that overly reformed, you're a terrible person type of thing, as a response to that, we have gravitated towards this idea of self-love. And you are enough, Eric. You are good enough. And all the things that come with it. There are religious trauma experts, therapists out there who put things out all the time about here's how you need to rebuild yourself after leaving toxic religion. And I see those all the time. And it's these affirmations of self-love. And I don't think that on the surface, those are necessarily bad. But as we say all the time, the toxicity is in the dose. When you go too far into the idea of self-love, things become toxic. And there's a great article in Time Magazine that we're going to link in the show notes from April of 2023 about how self-love is actually making us lonely. The author of the piece, I'm going to butcher the name because I always butcher names, Dr. Maytel Eyal. I'm sorry if you're listening. I said that wrong. If you know this,
you know, great the thing doctor, is when you apologize. Say it in a Southern accent like you've got, I think people just forgive it.
I'm sure. I had a pastor once telling with Old Testament names, just say it with confidence and keep moving. So that's Dr. Ayal.
That's a bless his heart moment right there. Okay, go ahead.
So this is what was written. In its commodified form, self-love is not really self-love at all. Instead, it's more like self-sabotage, convincing us to hyper-focus on ourselves at the expense of connecting with others. Ultimately, our prevailing cultural emphasis on excessive autonomy and self-reliance has engendered a society rife with disconnection. She goes on to say, when self-love becomes entangled with self-absorption and materialism, serious consequences emerge for our collective mental health. Studies show that too much focus on oneself is associated with anxiety and depression. On the other hand, self-love through the warped filter of radical individualism tends to make us feel alienated, disconnected, and stuck in our own heads. So, Eric, have at it.
Can we just like use words that we already know? Like, there's a difference between being self-love and selfish or self-centered, but that barrier is so close. So, you know, like just like there's like selfless and self-hatred, right? I want to be selfless because I want to make sure that I'm sacrificing for others because I want to be selfless. But then it's like, oh, well, no, I want to be selfless because I want other people to love me and feel better about me. That's not right. In the same ways, it's like, should you have self-love on the base level? Yes. And, you know, whether you've gone through therapy or other pieces like that, things that I definitely recommend. There's a sense of like when an emotion comes up inside of me, on a reaction that's happening, should I identify where that feeling is manifesting itself physically in my body? Yes. How is that affecting me? You know, take some time, take a breath, do like a self-evaluation, a self-check. Yes, that is great. Like that has helped me immensely. But when all you're doing is checking your own diagnostics and looking at your own dashboard and never seeing what's around you, like let's say you're flying a plane and you're only looking at your own instruments, and you're not seeing what's happening around you and you're only focusing on the internal. And I think that's where we're talking is like on one, there's almost like pendulums within the pendulum. On the self-love side, you're going all the way to the extreme of it's selfish and it's all about me. And I care too much about me that I don't care about you. So I see that a lot with like, you know, the way that Gen Z, quote unquote, and even some millennials are being called in the workplace where it's like, oh, boomers and Gen X, when they're asked to stay an extra 15, 20 minutes, they're like, oh yeah, I'm going to do it because I'm going to do it for the company, blah, blah, blah. And millennials and Gen Z are like, I don't care. I'm out because I need to protect myself, you know, worth, and I need to protect myself this and self that. There's a happy medium in there where you don't have to be an expletive deleted, a butthole here and act that way when you can still say I've got boundaries and I can care about myself, but I don't have to care about myself to the exclusion of others.
Yeah. And there's the idea that self-love in and of itself is not bad. But as with everything, when our focus gets off, it gets toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, for many of us who are in the situation that we are, that we know our audience is, that are kind of leaving fundamentalism and trying to find a new way to follow Jesus that is more honest and, I'm trying to think of the word I want to use here, authentic to the way we read scripture. As we have left that fundamentalism, we have been drawn to self-love because for so long we were told we were terrible people who could do nothing on our own. Without Jesus, and there's a spiritual truth to that, but the way it was taught to us was that everything about us is evil. And this is a side note for a different day, but that teaching, one of my big reasons I hate it so much is because it doesn't take into account the regeneration of who we are after we give our life to Jesus, the regeneration that we experience through the Holy Spirit. Different theological topic for a different day, but that's so the reason I say is we leave that and we go to this idea because we have been taught so many bad things about ourselves that we did have this self-hatred and the self-loathing. And so now we've moved over to the other end and we want to learn to love ourselves again. But just as people who leave the conservative political movement, the fundamentalist conservative political movement, and are now like flaming progressive liberals, and I don't say flaming in a derogatory mind. I realize that came out incorrectly. I apologize for that. But they are like on fire for the progressive side of things. That pendulum swing has gone so far, it's very easy to go from self-loathing all the way to toxic self-love. Yeah, and we've got about 20 minutes. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so here's the example that I've heard used before when it comes to these types of things, right? Is, you know, think about when you fly in an airplane and they talk about the oxygen tank, the oxygen mask. It's like if you're traveling with someone, you know, a minor or whatever, or a loved one, put the oxygen mask on yourself first before assisting others. And I think too many of us forget the second part. And we go, well, I've got to make sure I've got the oxygen mask on myself because otherwise, you know, like I have to be good first. Yes, you do. But if you stop there and you're not putting the oxygen mask on yourself first so that you can be useful to others, that's where I think we go wrong, is we stop at the, you know, similar to our conversation whenever last week or whatever about truth in love. If you don't put them both together and say, yes, I need to make sure that I have a healthy self-image so that I can be a better husband, a better father, a better son, a better brother, a better neighbor to people around me. Yes. But if you go, no, I just need to have a healthy self-image. For some people, like you've alluded to, whether it's leaving toxicity in church or leaving abusive situations at home or an upbringing that wasn't awesome, yeah, you might need to take some time and say, all right, I need to do some healing with a therapist, you know, under the direction of an expert. I need to do some self-healing to bring myself back to an equilibrium so that I can be someone who is a productive and helpful and generous participant in this social love your neighbor aspect of it.
And that's what I want to spend the next 15, 20 minutes on. Because that's how much time we have left in today's episode. Before we do that, if you like the show, please leave us a rating wherever you listen or watch. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, it'd be a huge help if you wrote up a small review. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to subscribe and hit that like button on today's video. Okay, that's out of the way.
Ooh.
The way we live in this tension, Eric has said it multiple times. It's like we have it here in the notes for a reason. The first place that we start with so many weeks is therapy and counseling. It looks different for so many of us. Sometimes it's clinical therapy. Sometimes it's having wise counseling from good friends. Sometimes it's somewhere in the middle of those two. But whatever it is, we need to have others in our lives who can shine a light on the shadows that may be causing problems that we're facing. And I don't want to spend too much time on this because we've talked about it throughout the episode, but explicitly, if you're dealing with any of these, therapy and counseling is a great place to start. We are gigantic advocates of that. With that said, one of the biggest ways I think we walk in this tension is understanding our identity in Christ. And I'm not talking about the Christian Instagram influencer version of that, where they just have you recite who you are in Jesus to convince yourself everything's going to be okay. That's the pop psychology version of this. We don't want that. I'm talking about truly understanding who you are in Jesus. And a few episodes ago, we did a show on contentness and being content. And in that episode, I talked about what it meant for me to learn how to be content and this process I'm going through about learning to be content. And part of my contentness is learning not to chase likes on social media. I've had to relearn what Jesus thinks of me and let that inform my feelings and give me the dopamine hits that I've always tried to get on social instead of doing it on my own. I've had to understand what Jesus thinks of me, my identity in him. And what that has allowed me to do is be more confident in doing the uncomfortable thing needed to love my neighbor. I no longer worry as much if they think something, if they're going to think something negative of me, if I take the extra step and do something loving. I know my motivations in that are to love them as Jesus loves me and as I love myself. So I'm going to do it more often than I would before. I also don't feel the need to show how smart I am by telling people how wrong they are on social media and get into social media debates about all sorts of stuff. That was a very part of, big part of who I was. But because I know who I am in Jesus, I don't have to do that. I can also be loving without having to worry about being right, because I know how Jesus feels about me and I don't need the approval of others as much.
He also doesn't need you to defend him. That's something.
There's that too.
I'm okay. Sometimes you just got to be okay with other people being wrong. And I think I've joked with you about this too, but it's like, you're allowed to be wrong in this. Like, it's okay. You're allowed to have your incorrect opinion in this matter. That's fine. And I'm okay with it. Move on. Because when you're confident that you are correct, or you're confident that you have the source of truth, you don't need to defend yourself.
And when you're confident in who Jesus, what Jesus thinks of you and who you are in him, you don't have to prove yourself to be right.
That's right.
Truly understanding who you are in Jesus, it doesn't take away all of the anxiety and the inadequacy and the low self-esteem that so many of us, including myself, experience. But what it does is it gives us the confidence to move past those things in order to love your neighbor and love those around you. So you can get past that anxiety. You're still going to feel the anxiety. That's when bravery comes apart. You have to be brave enough to step out and love someone like yourself the way Jesus loves them, despite the anxiety. But when you have the confidence in Jesus and what he thinks of you, you can have the bravery to step past the anxiety.
Yeah, I think the thing that I would add to that is, you know, and I think if you've been in church for long enough, sometimes this just becomes, it becomes something that's rote that you don't ever like really apply. But if you're truly forgiven, then you should be able to forgive others, right? If you could truly recognize on the other side that like, I'm not perfect and God doesn't call me to get it perfect. So why am I treating others like they have to be perfect? And in a lot of cases, which we didn't really touch on in the pendulum side, but like in a lot of cases, the place that you are the most judgmental against other people is a place that you are judgmental against yourself, right? So, you know, it's like, I would never do that, right? Well, you would never do that probably because in some ways you would feel judged because you did it. And it's like, okay, great. It's like, what does that have to do with what somebody else wants? Like, I think about it from my, I've got relatives that will not be named, but they are definitely in the older generation. It's like, anytime other relatives my age post about a tattoo or something else like that, especially if they're female, the reaction, which many of you probably are already like ticking on this one, but it's like, you're going to look terrible in your wedding dress with those visible tattoos. Who gives a crap? First of all, like, she doesn't care about that. Like, you know, you are using that judgment because of something you feel inadequate in yourself or because something you wouldn't do. But admitting that, like, one, you are not the source of all preference and opinion and right and wrong. So if I'm allowed to say I'm not perfect, I should be allowed to give other people space and grace to not be perfect. If I'm allowed to say I've done some stupid things and I've been forgiven for those things, I should be allowed to say, I'm going to give you space and grace and allow you to do that. Because the old adage I think is true, hurt people hurt people. And so if you are manifesting out hurt and pain to others.
Hang on, I need to interrupt you. You didn't say that right. It needs more Southern. Hurt people hurt people. Forgiven people, forgive people.
Blessed people. Anyway, so, but that's it. It's like, if you are recognizing that there's pain coming out of you, it's probably because there's pain within you. And I think that's another piece when you're looking at others and you say, like, if they're projecting pain out to other people, there's something probably within them that's hurt. And so I think as I've grown, I've come up, because I was that young, restless, reformed guy who used that
a-hole
who used that total depravity as an excuse to bludgeon other people to death with those sorts of things. It's like, I've grown a lot more empathy for people, and just to say, yeah, you're allowed to live your life. It's okay. And maybe the most loving thing that I can do is not to make the sarcastic comment, is not to try and tell you the yeah, but, or is not to try and tell you all of these other things, but to actually love you and accept you. Great. If you want to say, hey, my pronouns are they, them. Awesome. I don't give a crap. I'm going to do that. Just like if I said, hey, Jonathan, and you said, yeah, I go by John. Great. I'd go John. And if I said John, and you said, no, I don't, I'd prefer you say Jonathan. Jonathan. Great. Awesome. No judgment there. I'm just going to do it. Why? Because what my personal belief is on that thing doesn't matter as much as you've asked me to call you by some name or by something or whatever. Like, great.
And then going back to last week's episode, if then we get into a relationship with each other and you ask me my opinion on something, I then can tell you that opinion.
Sure.
Because I have loved you and showed you the humanity that we talked about 2 weeks ago. And we now have the relationship that I can make that judgment and have an opinion on, and only then should I be giving it.
And I would also say the other side to that, which I don't think we talked about in that episode, is your opinion might change when you have that relationship, when you start to realize, oh, I'm actually talking to some,
week eight of this season.
Let's say it's tattoos. Everybody with tattoos are evil. Right. Like, have you ever talked to have you ever talked to somebody with a tattoo, you know, spent time with them, done all that, like anything like that, spending time with people that are different from you or people that have that you are judging, I think also not only gives you the authority to speak more because you've spent the time to get to know them, to love them, and actually be changed by them.
And then the last little piece, if we go to the other side of the two extremes we've talked about, the self-love side, we've talked about how the toxicity is in the dose. And self-love on its own and in the right context is not toxic. Going back to our article from Dr. Ayal, Dr. Hayal.
Hey, y'all.
All right, sorry. She quoted the book, The Art of Loving by Eric Fromm. This was written, I think, back in like the 50s. He wrote, love of others and love of ourselves are not alternatives. On the contrary, an attitude of love towards themselves will be found in all those who are capable of loving others. Dr. Hayal went on to say that for Fromm, quote, self-love operated as a necessary condition for relating well with our fellow humans.
Yeah, I mean, that's a much better way of saying it, but that is a much more eloquent way of saying it. It's like, it's impossible for you to love your neighbor if you don't appropriately love yourself.
So your self-love, your love of self, has to be done in a way to motivate yourself to love others. It's right. Both and.
Yep.
It can't turn into a toxic self-love that is arrogant, that is self above all, myself above you, that turns into an arrogance and a narcissism. It cannot be that. And let me say this, it is extremely easy to go too far in that direction when you are first learning how to love yourself. I got so excited to hit my microphone. That is an easy thing to take the pendulum too far. So if you are experiencing that, if you have experienced that, there's no shame here because I've done the same exact freaking thing. As I have felt so highly of myself to a toxic side before. And so this pendulum for me, I'm so passionate about it because it's a constantly swinging pendulum. And this is one that for me, the pendulum between self-loathing or self-hatred or whatever you want to call that and toxic self-love swings so fast side to side for me personally that it is extremely hard to get the tension right and to live in the balance. So when I talk about this, I am emphatic about it because I understand the day-to-day daily struggle it is to get this right. But if the command is the greatest commandment, love the Lord your God above all, and to love others as yourself, if those are the two greatest things we're told to do, this is a tension that we have to work at. We have to work at living in. It's not something we could passively just let happen. We're going to constantly have to put the work in to say, am I leaning too far to self-loathing? Am I leaning too far to self-love? Because if we don't actively work at it, we're going to naturally be pulled one way or the other.
Yep. Yeah, it's that self-evaluation that is probably the most important. Do you have an accurate view of where you are, what you're doing? And I would argue that you can't have a complete view of just the way that you're feeling. And I think part of what you've talked about is that toxicity of self-love is valuing your own self-opinion and self-evaluation above all. And so having an accurate ability to go, hey, Jonathan, this is how I'm feeling about this situation. This is where it's manifesting in me. This is my reaction. This is how I see it from inside the cup. Can you take a look, since you're outside the cup, and tell me, what are you seeing out here? Now, I'm not going to just go to the other side and go, Jonathan, tell me everything I need to do. And, your opinion of me matters more than anything else. You know, I middle school Eric in relationships, that's where I was at right there. It was like, oh my gosh, what does this girl think of me? Blah, 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 blah. Like my entire self-evaluation was exported to or delegated out to the person I was interested in, as opposed to going, all right, here's what I see. I'm going to bring, 50% or 70% here. Somebody I care about that cares about me, what do you see? And now I'm going to evaluate those together to make sure that I'm not going one way or the other.
And to tie all this together and put a pretty bow on it, we started this season talking about the new prosperity gospel in the American church and how we've swung that direction. If you look at it, where we came from, young, restless, reformed, was toxic self-loathing. Where we have gone with the new prosperity gospel is toxic self-love. And as with most of the things we've been talking about, Jesus is found in the middle. The real Jesus, the full Jesus, the complete Jesus is found in the tension between those two, because there are pieces of both of these. There are pieces of total depravity, yes. And there are pieces of God does have a great plan for you. He does have life and life abundantly for you. So I hope as we finish out the first half of this season that you see that this tension actually goes through so many of the things that we've been talking about and is constant in pretty much everything in our life right now. And if we can get this tension correct, it unlocks how we approach so many other things in the world today. We don't have to agree on everything. We don't have to have the same opinions. But if we can get this tension between self-loathing and self-love correct, then we can follow Jesus together despite our disagreements in politics, theology, doctrine, sports teams, whatever it is. We can do it together because we have a love of Jesus that transcends everything, and we are walking in the tension of self-love and self-loathing. That's it for this week. If you want to talk more about this topic, feel free to reach out to us on social or send us an email to continue the conversation. Eric is at EricW712 on all the major platforms. I am at Jonathan underscore Caron on them as well. You can email us at tensionpodcast@tensionpodcast.com. Next week, we're doing an episode that's kind of a standalone one-off inspired by one of our Q&A episodes last fall. And we're going to try to answer the question, what does healthy Christian masculinity look like? So a big topic, but we're going to try to talk about it in about 45 minutes. If you like the show, do us a favor, rate us and review us wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe on YouTube, leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Share this episode with a friend if you found it interesting or helpful. But as always, thank you so much for making us a part of your day, and we'll talk to you again next week. Have a great week, everybody.
score.